Well, welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I love to talk to people about food. And one of my favorite experts, the guy I like to listen to most, perhaps, is Jim Early, who is in real life. Well, I shouldn't say that. In his making money life as a Winston-Salem lawyer, I got to know him as the author of Tar Heel Barbecue, where he taught me a lot. I don't think anybody's quite done that route of visiting every county in North Carolina to check on the best barbecue. But now I've learned that Jim is not only an expert on barbecue, but on all kinds of other things as well. Hunting cooking, southern cooking, all types of cuisines and sauces and dips and desserts. And he's put a lot of that into a book called Reflections, The Memories and Recipes of a Southern Cook. And Jim Early is talking to us right now. Jim, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
How do we pull you away from the practice of law? How can you make a living practicing law with all this excitement and work about food?
I'll work tonight to get to talk to you this afternoon.
Well, you're great. You're great. Can we reminisce just a little bit about barbecue before we start talking about Reflections?
Sure.
Jim, you visited 100 counties and checked out the barbecue places and places to get barbecue in each one of those counties that had an outlet and put them all together. And that book, Soul Well, was popular, still is. But as I found out from my little Interstate Eateries books, things change. Got to keep them up to date.
Well, that's true, but the book that I wrote, The Best Tar Heel Barbecue, Manio to Murphy, has been described as the most definitive book on what kind of barbecue ever written, and I hope that's the case. And it stayed very viable. I printed 7 times what I was told to safely print the first time we sold out. Lowe's Foods sponsored that printing, and then BB&T picked up the book, and we printed 5 times what I was told to print the second time.
What are you talking about in numbers?
Well, thousands. I don't want to go into all that. But anyway, thousands and thousands of books. And we're ready for third printing.
You're ready for a third printing already? Well, golly. Well, no, speaking of definitive books, had lunch recently with John Shelton Reed here in Chapel Hill, who's working on a barbecue book, and he said just what you said, that yours is the definitive, and that you've been helping him write about barbecue in a different tack, but he was praising your work.
Well, that's mighty kind, and I appreciate that. I don't know of anyone that has done the type of book that I did. I put on my chef's hat. I went to all 100 counties, did about, when it finally ended after making retrips and retrips, when people said, if you visited so-and-so's barbecue in such-and-such a little village or crossroads, and I would go back to find that it burned 3 years before. You know, I had just about 25,000 miles on the road and field work, and I stopped at and ate at 228 barbecue places, and I put 140 in the book as the best I could find. Now, I didn't find them all. I say that on page 20. But I did my best.
Well, there's no way you can. You just have to do the best you can and do it better than anybody else. You're with a catalog of places to eat. You're not going to ever be able to get everything that somebody else might have put in the book.
And there are places that fix good barbecue, fire stations that do annual fundraising, caterers who do catering work. But none of those places have a sit-down restaurant where I could direct the public. So there are a lot of places and a lot of people, individuals and groups, that cook good barbecue. But if the public couldn't come and sit down, they were not included.
Well, Jim Early, we want to talk about your the newer book, Reflections, the Memories and Recipes of a Southern Cook, but I can't let you loose on the barbecue without asking you again to comment on all of the questions that we always get, and that is it better, first of all, is it better barbecue if it's done with a whole pig, or is it better if it's done with selected parts like shoulders?
It's not necessarily better by having done it either way. I was born in Eastern North Carolina. I grew up in my childhood from school to my present age in Winston-Salem. So I came to learn to appreciate the Lexington style. I still like the Eastern style, my roots, my childhood type barbecue cooking. You can fail in any number of ways, the cooking, the sauce, the time from the plane to the plate, whatever, and have less than a wonderful product cooking either way. Cooking whole hogs or cooking shoulders does not assure you of having good barbecue. You've got to know your flame, and you've got to have good sauce, and you've got to get it from the pit to the plate in the shortest time.
Now, you said something about got to know your flame. What does that mean?
That means you have to know something about your fire and the heat. Barbecue cooking is typically 250 degrees. It's a low heat, slow cooking over a long period of time, generally 8 to 10 hours to cook a pig. They normally cook about 6 hours, skin side up, and then flip it, sauce it on the inside, cook it another couple hours. That's a rule of thumb. You still need meat thermometers unless you've done hundreds of pigs and can do it by eye. You've got to know your flame, and you've got to, if you're cooking with charcoal or wood, you've got to keep different amounts of heat under the shoulders and the hams because they're the thicker parts, and you generally put heat under the whole pig to begin with, and then you freshen cold every 30 minutes or so, depending upon the time of the year, humidity, all of this. You know, pigs finished on corn, pigs finished on peanuts have different moisture content. Different woods have different moisture content. Hickory cooks hotter and faster than oak. You sometimes need some of both to keep the fire even. But you have to know what your temperatures are, and you have to maintain them, and you don't want to be peaking a lot because your heat escapes, and it takes longer to cook your pig. So you need to spend some time grilling other things before you cook a pig. But it's not that difficult, and I would start off with something like, if you're going to do it with a charcoal, especially charcoal, I would start off with something like a Weber kettle type and cook Boston butt. Still takes 8 hours because it's the thickest part of the pig. It's the upper half of the shoulder. But try that before you do a whole pig.
Mm. Well, the people who cook for a living and do it at sit-down restaurants, the way you describe it, the complexities of managing the different temperatures with charcoal or wood would speak in favor, wouldn't it, of using a more controlled heat source that you, like gas, that you could control. But the experts are...
There's a number of reasons for using electricity or gas, and controlled heat is one of them, but also it doesn't require the salary of a pitmaster. It doesn't require buying wood or charcoal. It doesn't require dancing with the environmental people because you make smoke. It doesn't require being grandfathered if you want to sell your business. It doesn't require higher insurance because you have flame in your kitchen. There's a number of things that go into cooking with wood or charcoal, open pit, that are not present with cooking with electricity and gas. And cost and being able to control your flame are just two of them.
In your experience, having tasted barbecue prepared at more than 200 different places in North Carolina, would you say that you've gotten good barbecue cooked with wood and good with gas and bad both ways as well?
I have gotten good cooked both ways. People who know what they're doing with electricity and gas and people who know what they're doing with charcoal and wood can produce a good product. And if they've got a good sauce to go with it and all the other things that contribute to a good barbecue meal, good sides, whatever, but mainly we're talking about barbecue here, then they can produce a good product, and you would find yourself pleased with either. that cooked by wood or charcoal, or that cooked by gas. I'm not making a deal out of that. If they people don't know what they're doing, then they can turn out a less than wonderful product, cook it either way.
Can you get wonderful barbecue cooked with gas?
Impressive. I don't know that you can get wonderful barbecue cooked with gas. There is a slight distinction between barbecue cooked with wood and gas because you've got more smoke. And if you like the smokier taste as opposed to the more roast pork type taste, then you might prefer the barbecue cooked with wood or charcoal to the barbecue mm-hmm. cooked with gas if you have the palate that's educated well enough to ascertain the difference. And most people don't, because I would say 99.44% of the barbecue served in North Carolina is cooked with wood, cooked with gas or electricity, and it's good barbecue, and people have enjoyed it for years.
Let me ask you one other thing before we take a break and then come back and talk about your new projects.
Okay.
Is the question about the argument between the East and the West. Your good friend and another great barbecue lover, Bob Gardner, argued in the Our State magazine this month that you know, there's not all that much difference between Eastern and Western barbecue. When you set North Carolina barbecue against the rest of the world, they're pretty similar when you compare them to what people call barbecue in other places. And I said, I wonder what Jim Early would say to that. And I wonder what Jim Early would say.
Well, I would disagree with that statement. If Bob made it, I'm not saying.
Well, you have to trust me. I might have interpolated it.
Yeah. I do trust you.
No. Don't trust me. Just say that. I said that.
If he said it, then I would disagree with it. There is a difference between whole hogs cooked Eastern style with an Eastern a true Eastern style sauce, which is the vinegar base primarily, with vinegar and sugar and water and crushed red peppers, black pepper, and so forth, and the Lexington style, which is primarily Boston butts or the whole shoulder, Boston butt being the hot top half of the shoulder, thick neck being the bottom half. The Lexington style is a vinegar-based dip. They don't call it salsa here. They call it a dip. And it has some of the similar condiments that the Eastern does, the aspect of vinegar and spices. But it also, they add tomato puree or ketchup to it, and they add brown sugar, and then they add their secret spices that make it their own special barbecue dip, and it's more of a sweet and sour taste. They also put that on their slaw and make red barbecue slaw, whereas down east you're going to have to get a white mayonnaise or vinegar slaw, and down east you're going to have to get corn sticks, Lexington area, you're going to have to get hush puppies. But there is a difference, and it's not so much in the cooking, because there are people up here, in fact there are probably more people in the Lexington area cooking with wood or charcoal than there are in the east of Raleigh area. Considerably more. And they cook a good product. They're not mixing the drier, whiter ham chopped with the darker, more moist shoulder as they do in the east, along with everything in between, the loin areas and so forth. They're cooking the darker shoulder, which is more moist, and they're both wonderful products, and I'm not choosing one over the other, and I'm not making a reduction of that, but there is a difference, and I don't think they're that similar. I think our North Carolina barbecue is different from any that I've eaten in 40-odd states and 5 foreign countries. Considerably different. We are the cradle of Keith. It started on our shores, and that's what I want to talk to you about later. But Texas has a claim to the brisket, and Memphis has a claim to ribs, and Kansas City calls itself in the minds of many, the melting pot, because they have some of all of it.
Yeah. Well, I guess maybe what maybe I ought to say, this is what question was raised in my mind, that if you really talk about North Carolina barbecue and you emphasize the similarities between Eastern and Western style rather than the differences, they both are talking about pork and they're both talking about it cooked slow in much the same way, and that the sauce has a sweet and sour taste with vinegar and a sweetener, and that that in some respects, if you weren't sensitive to the tomato piece of it, you might not be able to tell the difference if you didn't have an educated palate. How about that?
I would probably go with that, with some caveat.
I guess I better let you give the caveat before we take a break. I was going to try to wrap this up while you were in agreement. Now, what's the caveat?
Well, I mean, I think we have distinctive differences. I don't think they are sufficient. I think there is becoming more of a blending of that. In some competition cookings, and I try to make as many as I can. I'm seeing in some Eastern contests, I'm seeing some, you know, where I'm judging or there to observe for whatever reason. I'm, you know, and people always want to, because I wrote the book, they want, Jim, come over here and try this. Well, I'm sensing a little more of a tendency to, in some of the Eastern sauces, I find them that they're a little sweeter than I remember. Maybe they're putting a little more sugar in it.
Uh-huh.
That sort of thing.
Uh-huh. People are just, as with food products across the centuries, people aren't, they're building on their traditions, but they're not sticking with them 100%. They're enriching those traditions.
No, and they're cooking for competition. They're cooking to win. They're not cooking to maintain tradition. They're cooking
to please. Cooking to please the current.
Cooking to please a judge's palate.
There you go.
To win. And if they perceive that the judges are beginning to favor a sweeter sauce, then they're going to go to a sweeter sauce.
Well,
it's just like the national competitions that I judge, you know, and I'll be judging the Jack Daniel's World Championship in Lynchburg in October. In the national competitions, if the competition cookers perceive that infusing and injecting the pig with different sauces or whatever, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong or bad, I'm just saying doing it will give them a leg up on their competitors, they're going to do it. And most all the people that are winning now are injecting. They pump those pigs up pretty good.
My golly. So before we know it, we'll not only be having these fried turkeys, but we might be having these big pots with fried pigs, whole pigs, before it's over. Well, listen, let's take a break. I'm talking to the expert on North Carolina barbecue and Southern cooking, Jim Early. He and I'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Jim Early. Jim is famous throughout North Carolina in food circles as the author of Tar Heel Barbecue, the results of his odyssey of visiting every North Carolina county and the barbecue establishments and picking about 140, 150 of them that he thought were the best. Now he has a book called Reflections, The Memories and Recipes of a Southern Cook. And Jim, tell us about how you move from barbecue to a more, you know, a richer, more diverse Southern palate.
Well, I have several years ago, for a period of about 3 years, I was a chef on the faculty at Salem College to teach gourmet cooking classes at night. And I developed a number of recipes, and I'm a member of the Southern Foodway Alliance, and in one of their magazines or something, newsletters, they were having a pimento cheese contest. This was about 3 years ago. And I never entered contests. And some friends of mine said, why don't you do that? And I said, try it. So I said, all right. So I took my mother's basic country pimento cheese recipe, which, as I recall, was her cutting a big piece of cheese off of a wheel that she kept there in the kitchen, and she ran it through number two or three universal sausage grinder and put some pimento in it and mashed it up with a fork and some mayonnaise and some salt and pepper, and that was it. So with that as the base recipe, I set about to make the best pimento cheese of which I could envision. And I did, and you had to write a story about it. So I wrote a story, and I'm not hard put to come up with a story. So
I'm sorry, what?
I'm not hard put to come up with a story. So I told a story about, you know, my days as a cowboy when I was five, and we lived in Henderson, and I used to climb over behind the attic wall and have a five-cell flashlight for a campfire and a daisy chain of extension cords and an old Motorola radio and listen to the Buster Brown Show, sponsored by Buster Brown Shoes. And they had Smiling Ed McCoy and his sidekicks, Froggy the Gremlin and Midnight the Cat. And they used to, one of my favorite stories was Bomba the Jungle Boy and his great bull elephant, Tila. Well, Mother would make fried apple pies, and on a rainy, blistery, wintry Saturday morning, that's where I could be found. And to respect the cowboy's need for space, she would hand that over the wall down to me, a fried apple pie and a pimento cheese sandwich and some sweet milk. And so I
sweet milk as opposed to buttermilk.
Right. We had a neighbor two doors up that had a cow, and he would share. I told that story and, you know, embellished it a bit here and there and sent it in. And John T. Edge, the director of Southern Foodway Alliance, called me later, about a month or so later, and said, Jim, I'm pleased to tell you that out of over 300 and some chefs and foodies that sent in pimento cheese recipes, yours is voted top three in the country, top three in our contest. People all over the country sent in.
Jim, excuse me for interrupting, but this was a contest for the recipe. You didn't have to submit a sample. This was based on
they fixed it in their kitchen.
Gotcha.
So I sent in the recipe and the story. And anyway, I was having a glass of wine and talking to a friend at a top-end restaurant here in Winston, and I was telling him about it. And he said, we need to put that on the menu. He said, we have a lot of people from all over the country come in because of Reynolds Tobacco and Haynes, Sara Lee and others, said, you know, and they're always looking for something Southern. So fix up a batch and I'll make it an appetizer. So this was Camel City Wine Bar and Cafe. And so he did, John, the owner did. And I made him a batch and it went really well. And so he wanted me to make some more, and I did. And pretty soon, you know, I was going home from my law office and working from 6 on Wednesday till 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning for the restaurant for Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And
Sunday, you were in the pimento cheese business?
Yeah. I got into pimento, and then Sunday afternoon after lunch, church and lunch, you know, I was working till midnight Sunday night making it for Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Well, that got old. And, you know, because I just have a regular kitchen in my home. I don't have a commercial kitchen. I had no help. And I couldn't make it in big batches. I had to make small batches. And so, anyway, we did that for a month or so. And then he said, you know, it's October. Can you make some fall-y type dips? And so I came up with a pumpkin souffle and a sweet potato souffle and a pumpkin and branded raisins and so forth. And so
now, where'd you get the recipes for this? For these,
I created.
Well, now, Jim, you can't create out a whole cloth without at least having some basic idea of where you're going, can you? I mean, you.
Yeah, that's what I do.
Well, I tell you what, I'm going to catch my breath, and take a break. And then I'm going to come back and try to figure out how in the world you can magic up stuff out of thin air, which is what Jim Early is telling me he does for making up new recipes that they're actually new. He and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Jim Early. Jim is the author of Reflections, The Memories and Recipes of a Southern Cook. By the way, if you tune in late, he's also the famous author of Tar Heel Barbecue because he visited barbecue places in 100 counties. And our own barbecue and Southern culture expert, John Shelton Reed, says that this is the classic barbecue description. But we're talking about Reflections. Jim, and I'm stunned with the idea. I can understand how you can take your mama's basic recipe of pimento cheese and improve it or make it different and put a little extra flavor on it. But now you've made a success out of that as sort of as a side venture, kind of fun. And then you're making up stuff, this sweet potato souffle. Don't you have some idea? I mean, isn't it based on something that you've had before, something you've eaten before?
Well, the book is based on memorable dining experiences that I have had as a child going up in Henderson and, Eastern North Carolina. And it also is based on my travels throughout the South, hunting and fishing, from Texas to the Keys to D.C. and back, that triangle. And some of these experiences occurred in 4 or 5-star restaurants. Some of them occurred in private homes, large and small. Some of them occurred in little mom-and-pop places where I pulled off the interstate at some little burg to get some bottled water or get some gas. And while I was there, I always have to ask if y'all got anything outstanding in the food area. And people tell me, I'll go in and buy it, and just if I don't do anything more than just taste it with a fork and leave.
Well, so all right, then I'm putting words in your mouth, and you correct me. But what you might do, that some of the dishes that you come up with are inspired by eating experiences that you've had, and you try to develop a recipe that would either duplicate or enhance or be a variation of the food experience that you had that you thought was outstanding. Is that a fair?
No.
Okay.
That's not it. Right. It was inspired by eating experiences, but in these 40 gourmet dips and spreads that are in this book, I may try to capture an entire meal into one dip.
Wow. All right, illustrate that for me. Can you give me an example?
Okay, one of the dips has collards, country ham, deviled eggs, roasted peppers, onion, peanuts, 3 cheeses, 7 spices. That's a whole country meal.
Into one dip that you'd dip with potato chips or vegetables or something?
Well, I'll tell you what to use to deliver it, because these are not necessarily potato chip dips. It's not that I'm having any aversion to people, eating potato chips and saltine crackers and Ritz and that sort of thing. But if that's not the cracker that I want the person to use to deliver the dip that will showcase the dip, then I tell them what corn stick or what of. I probably tested 80 or 90 different crackers and so forth to come up with what I thought was the best to deliver each one of these to showcase the dip.
Well, now, so like people say, with different wines, here's a good meal, or here's a good meat, or here's a good fish to have with this particular wine. You say, with this particular dip, here's a good cracker to use.
And a wine. I'm not recommending wines in every instance, but some I do. And, you know, the book is divided into, it has about five country cooking dips and spreads. It's got about the same number of shellfish and fish. It's got about six cheeses. It's got a section on fruits, berries, and it's got a section, you know, that encompasses strawberries, blackberries, and blueberries, apricots, cantaloupe, bacon, and pistachio nut, sun-dried figs with brie and pistachio.
All right, you got my mouth watering.
You know, wild bean, cherries, goat cheese, toasted English walnuts, you know, stuff like that. And then it's got about five dessert dips. And then it's got 10 desserts that are classic Southern desserts that had no written recipes, that were 100 to 150 years old, that were cooked on wood stoves. And I made a spreadsheet for each dessert, and then I researched it because I've had these desserts.
Now, again, getting back to my original argument with you, you are taking dishes that were created and you are adapting them, enriching them.
No.
You're not you're arguing you're making them up, and you've just said that you don't make them up. You're taking 100-year-old recipes.
Well, no, I got off on the 10 desserts. Let's stay with the 40 dips.
Okay. I tell you what, let's take a break, and then we'll come back, and we'll start. We'll separate those two, because both of those dishes have got my mouth watering, Jim. But whether we agree about where they came from, man, they get the saliva going just as you think about them. Jim Early, expert on Southern cooking and barbecue, and I will be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Jim Early. Jim is the, too much to say about him, author of Tar Heel Barbecue, and now Reflections, the Memories and Recipes of a Southern Cook. And Jim, I promised I won't interrupt you as you tell us about some of the good dips, and then if we have time, maybe some of the good desserts.
All right. Well, the dips, yes, there was an inspiration. It may have been my Aunt Pearl's corn pudding. So I took Aunt Pearl's corn pudding, for which there was no written recipe, recreated that, took it to a corn pudding souffle level, and then used that as part, one ingredient in the particular dip, the corn pudding souffle with toasted pecan dip. You know, but the corn pudding is just one part. There's at least three cheeses in every one of these dips, in addition to the corn pudding and whatever. You know, Aunt Pearl's corn pudding was the inspiration for it, but even the corn pudding used in the dip is not Aunt Pearl's corn pudding.
Right.
I had to duplicate that before I could take it on up to another level, and it's like a souffle now, but I just use so many.
How would you, just in general terms, how would you transform a corn pudding into a dip or souffle? What would be the basic stuff you'd have to do to do that?
Well, it has, like I said, three cheeses in it, and it has the corn pudding, and it has a custard, much like the custard I would use for my banana pudding, which is a boil custard that's very rich with, you know, lots of eggs, 16 eggs, and, you know, that sort of thing. And I use half and half. and it has that actual boiled custard in this dip. Or you could substitute the Danone like cream brand vanilla yogurt and some Splenda if you want them. And I tell you how to do that if you don't want to spend the time making the boiled custard. But these dips and spreads are like unlike anything you've ever eaten or tasted. I promise you, they are.
On your dips, I guess the common ingredient is often cheese.
Well, and, all three of them. And, all of them have at least three cheeses.
And what are the, what can you teach us real quickly about cheeses as a part of a dip? What do we need to know?
Well, there are some that all of them will give it flavors. They're not the same cheeses. All of them are different. And I've went through hundreds of cheeses to come up with this. This book represents over 2,700 hours in the kitchen and over $18,000 worth of groceries in development.
So, I hope that you're getting a refund on the credit card or something, that you're getting building points.
It was a smile to do it.
In many cases, you suggest brand.
About the desserts?
Yeah, but first on the cheeses, is the brand name's not important? Are cheeses the same?
Brands are important on everything. If you change one brand, you've changed the flavor of whatever it is you're trying to make. You know, and that's true with the vinegar you use in your barbecue sauce or anything else. You build that recipe, and it's a combination like a good mixed drink should be a taste, and you should not be able to taste any of the component parts. But if you change a component part, you change the taste.
Wow. Well, gosh, we can talk about that, but I promise you that I do want to hear about the desserts. Tell us about the desserts.
Okay. The desserts are classic Southern desserts that I had experienced, and they had no written recipes. And so I went and met with lovely ladies in their 80s, 70s, 80s, trying to remember how their mother, their aunt, their granny made it on a wood stove 100, 150 years ago. And I would do a spreadsheet for each dessert and a granny's name and a column under her name with the ingredients down the left-hand side. And I would fill in all they could remember under each granny as I talked to these different sets of children, grandchildren, nieces, nephews. And then when I had the spreadsheet filled in as much as I possibly could, I read each line item like flour, and I had a pinch. She used a handful. She used a metal cup. She had a scoop, that smidge and a whisk and, that sort of thing. So I would create a prototype recipe and make that, because you have to have a known before you can mess with it. Otherwise, you continue to have an unknown. So I would create a prototype recipe, and I would make it, and then I would sail it out into the backyard, like a frisbee at midnight, and start over. And I did this time after time until I was able to make the exact recipe that I was seeking. Once I could make it three times consecutively, exactly like I wanted, then I start messing with it.
You'd start doing what?
I start messing with it and putting things, taking it to a gourmet or a different place where I wanted to take it.
You'd start experimenting some.
Yes. Well, like the chocolate pie.
What do you call that pie?
The chocolate pie that I was trying to capture.
Uh-huh. I was just saying there is a pie in here called Better Than Sex Chocolate Pie. Is that the end result?
Right. Well, that was what a lady. See, when I made these things, once I got them where I liked them, then I didn't eat any of this. I just tasted it like wine tasting, because I had to keep doing it over and over and over. But when I got it like I wanted it, and I was in the process of making it three times and making sure I could make it three times identically like I wanted, then I gave it away. And this chocolate pie I gave to a lady at the diner where I was, where I grab a sandwich from time to time when I'm, trying to get out and get a bite of lunch. And she tasted it, and she said, "Oh, my God." She said, "That is better than sex." Well, I'm not going to inquire into your personal life or your penchant for chocolate, but if that's what you want to call it, that's what we'll name it.
Wow, that's a great story.
Name the pie Better Than Sex Chocolate Pie. But once I made the chocolate pie, then I put things in it like Bailey's, Kahlua, Frangelica, Cream de Coco Dark, Costa Rican liqueur, Unperked Colombian coffee. I took espresso beans, chocolate, and dark chocolate and malt chocolate covered espresso beans, and put them in sandwich bags and smashed them with a hammer on my butcher's block. You know, they've got things in it that Granny never thought about putting in the chocolate pie.
So what you've done is to take some recipes from earlier times, define them, and then work out a way to modify them that puts in what you've learned about cooking all your life and makes them rich and even better than they were 100 years ago.
I hope so.
Well, it's a great story. Jim, one other thing about this book is it's a beautiful book. It's organized well. It's got full of color. It's got pictures of the resulting products that make your mouth water. For those of us who may never go in the kitchen and cook, it's fun to read. So thanks for doing it and sharing it with us.
Well, you're quite welcome. And I hope that I have done it in a fashion that makes it easier. And the cooks that have come back to me say that they feel like I'm standing right beside of them.
I could see that. Well, you've almost inspired me to go in the kitchen and try to make this better than Sex Chocolate Pie. Some of the other dishes that you put in front of us. Jim, can't wait to talk to you again. What's your next project? Real quick, just in 10 seconds.
I want to talk to you about the North Carolina Barbecue Society that I've just incorporated as a nonprofit, and we're up and running, and lots of good information
all
to
right.
share with you.
We got a deal. We'll talk about that at whenever you're ready, and thanks for spending this time. Thanks for those of you who are listening. I'll be back same time
Always
tomorrow.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Jim.